Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
Good morning, slightly more tired friends. It's 4 minutes after the hour. We're glad you're with us today. Bill Arnold here. I'd like to start your day off with Romans 8:28. You may know that verse, and if you don't, here it is. And I'm going to read it in the message, because sometimes on a Monday morning with one less hour of sleep, we need something that goes like this. Meanwhile, the moment we get tired in the waiting, God's Spirit is right alongside helping us along. If we don't know how or what to pray, it doesn't matter. He does our praying in and for us, making prayer out of our wordless sighs, our aching groans. He knows us far better than we know ourselves, knows our pregnant condition, and keeps us present before God. That's why we can be so sure that every detail in our lives of love for God is worked into something good. And if you have something important this morning that you're on your way to, or you're facing a big trial, and maybe you don't even know the words, so I just want you to be reassured the Holy Spirit is going to bat for you. He's there on your behalf, praying and letting God know exactly how you're feeling through all of your wordless sighs and aching groans. So he knows us far better than we know ourselves. We can trust him the whole way throughout the day. So big news today is this crazy storm that's going on, and it is all over the country for the most part, except Hawaii, those lucky people. And there is a gigantic storm out east in New York and Boston, and of course they call that the nor'easter. And I think I've used that expression many times before in my life, a nor'easter. I don't even know what it is. But so I did a little research, and it is a macro-scale cyclone. That's what a nor'easter is, a macro-scale cyclone. It's an offshore air mass that rotates counterclockwise, and it tends to blow northeast to southwest over the region covered by the northwest quadrant of the cyclone. Now you know what it is, don't you? I still don't know what it is. See, I hate reading stuff and then still being clueless. They thrive on converging air masses. The cold play air mass and the warm air mass converge over the water, and that creates what we know as the nor'easter. That term originated in 1612. Now, do you know the difference between a storm watch and a storm warning? A watch means forecasters are monitoring the situation and you should be prepared. A warning means you should take action due to a life-threatening danger. So in other words, a watch means you need to know where the shovel is, and a warning means you better have a frozen pizza in the fridge because you're not going anywhere for a while. But I hope that you are surviving okay. The weather in your neck of the woods is not too bad. There is thousands of flights that have been canceled out east. Airlines have canceled already 1,000 flights throughout the region in New York and Baltimore area. So we do have that last winter storm that's really kicking up here. But we've got a great program today. We're going to talk to my friend Patrick Albanese. We're going to review all the news headlines that went on over the weekend. And then we're going to talk to Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College. He's a professor there, one of the smartest guys I talked to on Monday. And so that's it. It's 7 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain,
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
It's Brainiac Monday. Monday, I always bring all the Brainiacs I know on. And I like to start my Monday mornings with my friend Patrick Albanese from West Des Moines, Iowa. Patrick, good morning. What are you guys doing weather-wise this morning?
We have some.
Yeah, okay. I figured that's usually what happens.
I was just going to say morning, and I'll let you make the moral judgment on whether it's good or not.
Oh, exactly. Now, do you know the difference between a storm warning and a storm watch?
Yes. Yes.
Just because you heard the broadcast already, or you actually know?
Well, my definition varies slightly from yours. A storm warning is my wife looks upset. And okay. The Storm Watch is, what are hotels going for tonight?
All right, let's jump into the news over the weekend. Of course, there's going to be a lot of talk for the next many months about the Obamacare replacement. And I found it interesting, Krauthammer was saying on Fox News that he said the Republicans need to find common ground on replacing Obamacare. And he said, once you retract an entitlement, you cannot do that once it's been granted.
It's very tough to do. And that was the whole point of, 8 years ago, forcing this thing down Americans' throat, because they said it doesn't matter if it's complete garbage. Once you get enough people used to getting freebies at the expense of others, who cares about them? We don't care about them. But, you can always play the grandma's going to eat dog food under a bridge. And, once you have that card,
right,
that one wins.
Yeah.
It wins every time. So it is going to be a tough thing. But, not to completely go off the rails at my disgust at the Republicans, but you guys have been talking about this for a long time. And you appear to be completely unprepared to do this. How did that happen?
Well, it's oftentimes easier to talk about it than it is to do it. We all know that in our personal lives as well.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times, it's like being a movie critic. You're going, look, I don't make the movies. I just complain about them.
Right.
And it seemed like the Republicans got very comfy saying, Obamacare has been a gift to the Republican Party because we've taken over governorships, we've taken over state legislatures, we took over the House, we took over Congress, and as long as we don't win the presidency, we're going to be fine. Because so if we win that thing, we're in a heap of trouble. And they ended up winning. It's like, oh boy, there goes the gravy train. We got to scream from the rooftops. This thing's a disaster. Hire us.
Right now,
fix it.
Obamacare Lite's not going to fly. I mean, in the eyes of the president, he wants to make sure it's a complete repeal and replace. Anything that looks like Obamacare may be a little bit of an egg on his face.
I think so. I think 8 years ago, Obama had a compliant media and press that, got to go out there and say, this thing's fantastic. Why just look over here. Don't look at that stuff.
Right.
Don't look at all those taxes.
Right.
It's going to be fantastic. And, somebody who has nothing will be covered and we should all be grateful. They're not going to cut Trump that kind of slack. So any flaw in the program, and there will be flaws because people fall through the cracks.
Easy for you to say. Let's take a little look back in the history books here. And the Republicans denounced the New Deal for 20 years. Then Eisenhower comes into the office in 1953, and they don't touch an element of it. Social Security remains completely intact. And they would be suicidal to have changed that entitlement. So what do you think is going to be happening with the Republicans trying to get Obamacare to work?
Well, here's the big speed bump, and it's a tall one, that they're going to run into, is that they're desperately trying to keep the popular parts of the program.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, is you realize that this whole piece of junk was sold to us on, yes, it's a steaming pile of garbage, but look at that little flower that happens to be growing out of that steaming pile of garbage. We will cover pre-existing conditions.
Mm-hmm.
If you know anybody that has pre-existing conditions, and we all do, they're going to say, whoa, hang on a second. I've had a real hard time getting insurance. So once you start down that path and say, okay, we got to keep that. You go, well, how are you going to pay for that? How are you going to have this program of a guaranteed issue that says you can't be turned down? So a young, reasonably intelligent person, so that would be somebody who hasn't gone to college, would probably say, I'm waiting till I get sick. And then suddenly you get back into that death spiral thing, which then means you're going to have to increase taxes over here to pay for the program, to cover the people that are going to wait till they get sick. And then you're just going to have a bunch of sick people in the program. And unfortunately, you're going to have to try to find a free market solution to that, which is going to mean that maybe the free market doesn't allow pre-existing conditions, but that we have a government program to cover those people that have something like that. I don't know how they're going to do it. It's tough.
But GOP is obviously not going to get everything they want out of a final bill, even though they have the White House and the House and the Senate. And it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Well, I also look at it and I go, look, you know, you guys are the ones that say you're smart. That's why I was supposed to vote for you. So, you know, cut me some slack for not figuring it out. But I think that we'll know for certain whether the program has any chance at being decent is if Congress exempts itself. Once they exempt themselves, we know that it's garbage.
Right.
This is for you guys. We, on the other hand, will not be partaking of this thing.
All right, Patrick, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, I have lots more things to talk about with you. Don't go anywhere. It's 15 minutes after the hour. Good morning. It's a little earlier than usual for you, isn't it? Yeah, I thought so. All right, be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 17 minutes after the hour. And if today feels a little earlier than usual, don't be surprised. It's going to take us a couple days to get readjusted. I'm talking to Patrick Albanese this morning from West Des Moines, Iowa. And Patrick, I found this interesting that California man is in federal court today after climbing over the White House fence. He's 26 years old, Jonathan Tran. He was arrested on the South Lawn Friday night. Secret Service said he claimed to be a friend of the president and was carrying a backpack, a computer, and two cans of mace. It sounds like me when I'm meeting my friends for barbecue ribs.
So yeah, you
same
often
things I have on me.
Yeah, exactly. You often climb the fence when you're coming to visit.
I do. So, and then also I found this interesting, and I want to talk to you about the trends in our culture today. And this is something we talked about discussing this morning. Of how there is a push for authentic manhood in the churches today, and then the concept of toxic masculinity that we see on campuses all over the country, and how there seems to be an attempt to change the way men think and operate and how God created us. And is this coincidence or is this the same? Is the church responding to culture? Are they agreeing that masculinity is toxic and needs to be changed? What's your take?
It's interesting. I was just thinking about this this morning because we had discussed it. And remember, it's got to be 12 years ago minimum when John Eldridge's book came out. You remember that one?
Wild at Heart? Oh, of course.
Yeah. And guys like you and I read it, and we kind of did the collective, you know, jump up in the air, rent a car thing. It's like, yes, you see, you got to let men be men, and it, you know, it doesn't, of course, mean I don't like that we always have to put these stipulations on things. You know, if you say, well, I'm not saying that this and this and this. What I am saying is, you know, men have certain qualities. God built us a certain way, built women a certain way. And Wild at Heart seemed to address that, you know, there's this spirit in men, this Wild at Heart spirit, and they want to do some rescuing, and you have to allow men to be that in order for them to be authentic men. But now it seems like the description of being an authentic man for some reason always seems to include housework, which I haven't quite figured out.
All right. Give us your TV commercial formula.
Well, I have, you know, and it's been this way for a good, I'd say 20, 25 years. And I would say that you can take 70% of television commercials and run them through this formula. So if you are a budding TV commercial writer and you say, gee, I have some ideas for how to sell soap, here's what you do. Rule number one, women are smart, men are stupid. Rule number two, kids are smarter than adults. And rule number three, animals are smarter than people. And if you look at most commercials, the guy will always be like, gee, honey, I don't know. I don't know much about lawnmowers. And she'll say, well, this little 2.5 horsepower with the self-drive and the mulching attachment is what you want, honey. He's okay, I'll just get that one. And then, of course, kids are always giving advice to adults because kids always know everything. And then animals always seem to outsmart human beings in every TV commercial going, those darn animals, they're smart. We probably shouldn't eat them. But, you know, it's degrading in a way. And a lot of this started maybe, I don't want to pin it all on Homer Simpson because I love the guy. But
who doesn't?
We had Homer Simpson and Ed Bundy that kind of showed up on the scene at the same time, you know, early 80s. And suddenly we said, this is no longer Father Knows Best. It's, I think, as you always like to say, Father Knows Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I think the church is maybe starting to follow the culture. They're maybe seeding a little ground saying, okay, well, men are this horrific work in progress. And so I do see a lot of the programs that are being taught at churches is on, you know, being an authentic man, or there's a very man up feel to them. And then they wonder why men are saying, I'm not really enjoying going to church. It's like, go there and I just get beat up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But some of it seems like we go back to Pajama Boy when you said, put on jammies, get a hot cocoa, and talk about healthcare. And I don't think there was one guy that I knew that thought that was a good idea or was attracted to that ad.
Yeah, that had a kind of a creep factor to it.
You think?
And you said, you go, well, first, I hope I'm not like that. Second, I hope that any offspring that I raise don't come home and say, I'm just going to be hanging around the house drinking hot cocoa in my footy pajamas, Dad, and I'm going to be lecturing you.
Right. Now, are you finding that in church when they're telling men they have to be authentic men, that doesn't cross over to the female side either? I mean, you can't say women, you need to be authentic women. You would never hear that, would you?
I don't imagine that church would be around long.
Mm-hmm.
If they, you know, and I understand that sometimes women, you know, in a relationship will say, this is the church I like to go to. Mm-hmm. And men will begrudgingly go along, and that does happen. I mean, that's the reality. You know, men, obviously we do need to be the leaders, and maybe part of being headship of the family is saying, here's our church and we're going to be following these biblical principles. But yeah, it does seem like you can. Well, I think the fact that we even have phrases like toxic masculinity or authentic manhood, and if you were to obviously switch the genders and say, we're going to be teaching a class at this college, because they teach college classes on toxic masculinity now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing they push, and they teach authentic manhood at the church. You say, well, if I switch the genders, do we have authentic, you know, womanhood? Do we have toxic, you know, femininity? And of course, the answer is no. You say, well, the fact that we don't cringe when we hear them applied to the men should let us know how deeply this is ingrained in our culture. We're almost accepting just by acquiescing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really, I'm not a big fan of the phrase. It's like, big fan of the phrase. It should make you say, no, I disagree entirely.
Mm-hmm.
God, this man, male and female, he made us different for reasons. And this is obviously, once again, here I do the disclaimer, not to excuse boorish behavior on the part of men. We do need to be gentle men. But I would, you know, I'd bet a whole lot on the fact that if Jesus were here today, people might be surprised at some of the antics he would pull. He did upset a couple of tables at a temple and say, you guys got this wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that was decidedly not pajama boy behavior.
No. I read an article by Larry Totten, and he said that evangelicals have confused Christ's command to love others with being likable, as if that were an attribute of God. It isn't. As such, they endeavor to be, above all else, inoffensive and polite. This doctrinal malpractice has given us a generation of men who are what C.S. Lewis calls men without chests.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think that, you know, you wonder if there's a part of us that says, well, this is an easier life to live because it absolves me of all conflict, because being a Christ-centered man means that occasionally you're going to have to take a tough stance.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And if you go, well, hang on a second, you know, maybe there's a way out of this. It's like, I can be pretty agreeable to that, not have to deal with conflict, but there will be times there will mm-hmm. be moral decisions made.
Mm-hmm. Because if we don't fight for things that matter to us, we will become the kind of Christianity that is sapped of its vitality and strength. So I want to encourage all you men out there today to stand strong, and women too. But Patrick, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, always a pleasure.
Yeah, I'll talk to you again soon. It's 26 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. Good morning, Bill Arnold here. We'll take a short break and be back. In just a couple of minutes after the news, we're going to talk to Dr. Adam Carrington, professor from Hillsdale College. This guy is a brainiac. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. 33 minutes after the hour. Good morning. We are loving you today. We just want to tell you that there are non-confrontational ways us Christians can bring up faith matters with non-believers. So here's Lee Strobel. He's the author of A Case for Christ.
I try to seize on whatever's going on in the culture. If a holiday is coming up like Christmas or Easter, I say, hey, what traditions did you have in your home when you were growing up? Did you observe Easter? Oh, yeah, you know, we used to get together with family and friends and have a dinner. I'd say, did you go to church? Yeah, you know, sometimes we did. Oh, did you like it? Nah, I never really did. When did you stop going to church? Well, you know, when I got to college, I just had a lot of questions and had other things to do, kind of sowing my wild oats, and so I didn't go. And here's a question. What do you think would get you to go to church? What would it take? Oh, well, golly, I think if I knew that there was a place where people were really serious about talking about this kind of stuff, I might go. Really? Well, you know, we could do that. We could talk about this stuff. So I try to just kind of use something that's in the culture to get into a conversation that way. I try to stay away from politics. I try to stay away from social issues as much as I can. And if I'm dealing one-on-one with someone, I just want to listen to them. I want to hear their story. Why are they a skeptic? Or why did they stop going to church? Or why have they not really pursued a relationship with God? So I want to listen more than I talk. I want to talk 20% of the time, listen 80% of the time. I want to ask good questions. And I want to affirm what I can affirm. And I want to sincerely and authentically care about that person and not feel like I have to have every answer to every question they could possibly ask.
That sounds so reasonable. He's got such a way about him. You can find that full interview with Lee on our website, myfaithradio.com. We'll take a little break when we come back. Dr. Adam Carrington is on the studio line, ready to go.
Let's be clear. The Supreme Court is not the law of the land, as so many often say. The Constitution is the law of the land. This is Jim Garlow. It needs to be said, no human, flawed court is supreme. God is. It's an understatement to say we have a constitutional crisis, and regretfully, there's no short-term fix. It calls for America to experience a spiritual renewal, a return to an adherence to biblical values. It took a lot of years to end up with a judiciary content to liberally be above the law instead of under both the law of the land and God's ultimate laws. Laws in God's revealed words, the Bible. Proverbs 30 verses 5 and 6 reminds us, every word of God is flawless. Do not add to his words, or he will rebuke you and call you a liar. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Good morning. It's 37 minutes after the hour. You're probably feeling a wee bit more tired today. That comes as no surprise. If you were like me, you got up at 2 in the morning on Sunday and moved your clock ahead, and it was not pleasant. But I have on the studio line Mr. Professor Brainiac, Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College, which is in Michigan. Adam, what's the weather there?
We're getting the snow, I think, that you all had, okay. but we're pretty early on. I think we've got less than an inch, but a few more coming from what the weather reports say.
Yeah, and do people seem to forget how to drive when the snow comes back after a period of no snow?
Yes, yeah. Although I will say I lived in Texas for a couple years, and then you just basically hold yourself up because being a Midwesterner, no offense to Texans, but they had no idea what they were doing when the snow came. So
they do have no idea. I've lived in Texas as well. All right, let's get to this GOP mess with the Obamacare replacement bill. You don't take away an entitlement ever, do you?
That seems to be the rule. Mm-hmm. It seems to become immediately sort of a third rail, to use railroad terminology, that if you step on it, that's a problem. And I think the GOP seems to be finding that out with the new plan, and I think their attempt at a new plan is sort of showing that they're trying to keep a lot of the health care law while trying to make some changes that I think that don't seem to go well together. And I think that's why they're taking a lot of friendly fire on the right. There's I think a pretty good reform of Medicaid in it, but then a lot of the rest of it just doesn't work very well together.
When you have an entitlement, though, and you put something into law, it makes it nearly impossible. And the GOP is trying to figure out a way to make this look like a complete repeal and replace, but it's really not going to be that, is it?
No, and there's a couple. Well, first, I maybe should say a little bit about what it is trying to change and what it's not. You know, it leaves in place a lot of the Affordable Care Act, most of the regulations mm-hmm. that are going to remain that really constrain the choices in the market. The regulations that made the if you like your plan or you like your doctor, you can keep them turn into such a untruth. Those are going to remain in place. It does get rid of the individual mandate that would have a penalty or a tax if you're Chief Justice Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
That would get rid of it, but it would replace it with basically a 30% extra charge if you don't keep continuous coverage. The things that would change would really, I think, they're going to when people look at it closer, are probably going to mean that people are going to get less help in buying their insurance than they did under the original health care law. And I should say, I think there's a reason why this is happening that builds off what you were saying. I think the original health care reform that they were thinking of was premised on repealing the entire health care law back when they were running for office.
Mm-hmm.
And that would make sense because then what you could do is you would get rid of all the regulations and give the chance for there to be more choice in the healthcare market. If you wanted to buy a low-level catastrophic plan, you could. If you wanted something more, you could. And then they were going to pair it with a tax credit where if you couldn't afford just a basic catastrophic plan, you could have it. And I think those two things, more choice in the market, a tax credit to help for people who can't, would have actually kept a lot of people covered and driven down costs. But when you can't get rid of the regulations, half of that formula goes out the window. And the reason they can't is they're afraid that they can't get a repeal through the Senate because of the filibuster, where you need 60 votes to end to end debate on an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, they're trying to do a process that's called reconciliation. And without going into all the legalese of what the Senate does, basically, if you are doing something that is modifying a bill from the House of Representatives and you're only modifying its effect on taxes or the budget, then you don't need the 60 votes to end debate. You can ram it through with 51.
Okay.
But then that limits what you can change to only things that affect taxes and the budget, and that's what they're doing here.
Okay.
So the reason, it's not so much they don't want to get rid of it, it's that they think this is the only way they can get it through, but then that limits what they do, and I think that's what's distorted the bill significantly and why it's drawing so much friendly fire from the political right.
Mm-hmm. When it says that the GOPs and the Obamacare replacement will make coverage unaffordable for millions, I think, well, let's see. The Obamacare project was I lost my insurance company, I lost my doctor, and my premiums went up 40%.
And I think that there's signs that this isn't going to help that a whole lot because a lot of the premiums going up were the people getting on the health care market tended to be sicker, and those who weren't as sick tended to stay away. I don't think there's enough incentives in this bill to change that. And the regulations made it so that if you had a catastrophic health care plan or a lower coverage plan that you were happy with, you don't have that choice either. So I think unless you really go after the regulations,
mm-hmm.
That can't be done through the process they're trying, then I think you're a lot of those things that people are frustrated with, it's not clear that they're going to get fixed through this version of the bill.
And there are conservatives that are very angry because they want full repeal, and they're causing quite the political fight right now, aren't they?
Yes, and this is just showing something I've talked about in past shows on here that, you know, there's a battle within the GOP right now. Yes, the GOP is electorally in the strongest position it's been
mm-hmm.
since before the New Deal, but it's not clear how much unity there is underneath it, because you have sort of libertarian-leaning conservatives like Rand Paul, like people on Reason.com, who want a full repeal, and then they want maybe not Paul as much, but you know, some of these other guys want almost a completely free market system where the government isn't subsidizing much of anything. But if you look at moderates and a lot of the Trump core voters, people who voted for Obama once or twice and then flipped to Trump, and that's really how he won states like Michigan, Wisconsin, you know, these states that put him over the top, they don't want that. They want people covered. They want a plan that helps those who they believe, you know, deserve it because they're working, but they can't quite make ends meet. And the idea that a lot of those voters are going to see their premiums go up, a lot of them are going to lose coverage, is pretty unacceptable on that end. So these people that want more government interaction, but of a certain kind, and those who want the government out of it, those are both part of the GOP now, and it's not clear how that impasse is going to be worked out between those competing factions of the party.
Mm-hmm. All right, Adam, this is very interesting, and you've got such an interesting analysis of all this. I've got several more questions for you when we get back. It's 45 minutes after the hour. I'm talking to Professor Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College. Be back in just a minute. Seven minutes after the hour, I am talking to Dr. or Professor Adam Carrington. Are you Dr. Adam?
I am, actually.
I didn't make a mistake, which is nice on a Monday morning.
Baylor University was foolish enough to give me a PhD, so that's on them.
Yeah, in the words of Nelson Muntz, ha ha.
Yep.
Exactly. All right, I've got a question. Ross Douthat, I think I'm saying that right, he wrote this interesting column about how Obamacare 2.0 is guaranteed to impose crushing costs on voters, and it's going to hurt the president's base and hand the power back to the Democrats. And that's kind of scary. That's like how fast in football game one turnover changes the game. Is that what's your take on that?
Well, I think his point is building off of and Breitbart, who's supposed to be a very pro-Trump website, is actually saying similar things, that I think this plays into what I was talking about before the break, that, you know, there's a peril and there is a promise if you want the Republican Party to do well, if you're a Republican Party person, with the Trump presidency. On one hand, a lot of the changes he's looking to make in the party could make it a bigger party with a larger majority, and he could be sort of like a Franklin Roosevelt or a Ronald Reagan, sort of makes the party bigger and it lasts beyond him, and he sort of leaves a legacy of winning, as I'm sure he would like to do. The other is that because of these divisions between Trump voters and the old Republican Party and all this, you actually have a large majority that sort of falls apart. Jimmy Carter, people don't remember how large his majorities in the House and Senate were. I mean, they were astronomical after the 76 election. And then it all sort of fizzled because there was all of this internal squabbling. And, and his column is really saying which way this health care bill shows that there's a battle going on for which way that will go. Now, you were saying it could drive up costs. If that is the case, if this ends up being a mushy middle bill that really gets nothing done and fails to appease both sides because it drives up costs, then, yeah, what you could have is this very fragile coalition between the different parts of the Republican Party break down and leave a large opening for the Democrats in 2018 and 2020. Mm-hmm. That's the concern I think he's expressing. And the concern that I think is real. I mean, I think if you're the Trump administration, you have to take risks. That's how you won. The question is will this risk pay off? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they're banking on, that it will. I mean, he seems very much behind this bill. We'll see if that's because he thinks it's going to get fixed, or if he thinks that this really is the best that can be done.
Mm-hmm. I love talking to you. You make everything so clear and concise. Let's talk about General Flynn. Is that a prom date that should have never happened?
That's what it looks like, and I'll say one of the best ways to tell if it is if the scorned or if the date says no,
yeah, right.
Or the date says expresses regret. How about that?
Yeah, there you go.
Because we've had Reince Priebus say that Flynn wasn't being straight or honest with the administration. We've had Vice President Pence say that it was a good idea to let him go, and it's all because we've now found out, in addition to the other issues that came up with Russia before, that he was paid more than $500,000, he and his company,
yeah,
basically to lobby for Turkey during the presidential campaign,
yes,
while he was serving as sort of an advisor to the president. And never registered as a foreign agent, never really revealed this in the way he should have. So there was a huge conflict of interest. He was sitting in on I think he was sitting in on intelligence meetings with the president while lobbying for a Turkish government that, by the way, has strong Islamic ties. Just a mess. And like I said, that's why I think Pence and Priebus and all these guys are saying that just confirms that we should have let him go and confirms that it probably wasn't the best idea to have him in there in the first place. I think Trump's made a number of good cabinet appointments. This was not his best one.
Mm-hmm. It is kind of the hand is caught right in the candy jar, isn't it?
Yeah.
It feels
I mean, one wonders how one, you know, in the age today where everything seems to be found out and made public, why he thought that wouldn't be an issue or why he thought it wouldn't come to light, that would be for a national security advisor to have had that in his immediate rearview mirror. I mean, he quit lobbying once he became national security advisor, but still, given how influential he was in the making of the now president's policy toward the Middle East, that seems like a serious conflict of interest, especially given how tough Trump has spoken and acted toward Islamic countries. For him to be doing that sort of seems transparently almost two-faced.
Mm-hmm. All right. Jeff Sessions has asked 46 attorney generals to hit the road.
He has. Now there are 93 total,
okay,
one for each district of a district court. The United States is broken up into district courts that hear all federal cases within that region of the country, and there's one attorney to sort of represent the federal government in each one. And yes, all of the remaining ones, and there were 46, Attorney General Sessions has asked to resign. And a big brouhaha is being made of it by many in the media, on the political left, and to be honest, I'll say this really is much ado about nothing.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is there is some problem with this, you could say, because of how late it took to happen, but it took a while for Sessions to get in. But it's pretty typical that when a new administration comes in, that he will ask the attorneys that served at for the president before to step down, so that there's continuity, so that you have people in that have your understanding of how the law should be enforced, of how crime should be prosecuted. Bill Clinton fired all 93 in 1993. There was not nearly the big kerfluffle about it. So
right.
I think this is really pretty standard practice. The only strange thing is that it didn't happen even sooner.
Yeah, I think I have one of those buttons left over. 93.
You know that button? Actually, there were a bunch of things about that back then. And
it doesn't surprise me.
And it's perfectly fine. You want you want those enforcing the law. This is a way you can keep the president responsible. If you think about it this way, even if you're not a big fan of President Trump, if half the district attorneys were holdovers from the Obama administration, how could you really hold him responsible when they do something you don't like?
Of course.
But if you let him assign his own people, not only does he get to do what he wants, but you can hold him responsible if you don't agree.
Yeah.
I think it really helps both sides to have a president put his own people in.
Adam, about 30 more seconds, but it looks like the illegal immigrant border crossings are down under the Trump administration. Comment on that.
Yes, this was from the New York Times, of all places, that said it. And the short of it is that I think even if you just talk tough on immigration, because the president hasn't had enough time to put in most of his policies, just talking tough can affect how many people look to basically break the law. And I think that that does show that even without tougher enforcement itself, although I think that'll come, that just showing that you're willing to talk about doing so actually will have an effect on those kinds of things. So, I think for those who believe, that you need a lot stronger border enforcement, this is showing that there are various ways to bring that about, and that at least so far that's been an effective deterrent just by saying you'll do more enforcement than
mm-hmm.
before.
Adam, you make me look good. I beg of you, please come back on the show. I beg of
you. Always happy to be here.
Okay, thanks. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks. It's 56 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be right back. Calm, smart people talking about the political process. I like that, Adam Carrington. A lot. Doctor, professor, he's got it all. All right, it's 58 minutes after the hour. When we come back after the news, we're going to talk about being called to childlessness, how God uses childlessness. We're going to talk about what the Bible says and encouragement for couples without children. We're going to do that with Dr. Karen Swallow Pryor. She's an author and professor at Liberty University. We will see you back in just a few minutes.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.